Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Little Bits, the easy way to build electronics with modular building blocks. Go to littlebits.com/android and you'll receive $20 off your first kit, plus free shipping in the U.S. And by PagerDuty. PagerDuty decreases alerting noise for IT operations and developers to ensure the right engineers are notified at the right time. Increase your uptime and sign up for a 14-day free trial at pagerduty.com/twit. And by Samsung SmartThings. Samsung SmartThings let you monitor, control, and secure your home from wherever you are using your smartphone. Right now, All About Android listeners get 10% off any featured SmartThings kit and free shipping in the U.S. when you go to smartthings.com/android and use the offer code Android at checkout. Welcome to All About Android, episode 233, recorded on Tuesday, September 29th, 2015, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Ron Richards, and I'm joined by Florence Ion.
I'm Florence Ion.
How you doing, Flo?
I'm good.
You survived today. Today was a big day,
right?
I'm
really tired. I'm still drinking a latte right now, which may or may not prove to be a bad idea.
True. Well, it's a big day, and as you can tell, Jason is out on assignment. He's on a vacation. So Flo and I are going to be bringing you the news. But luckily, we brought in a ringer. We brought in Tim Schofield, also known as QB King 77. How you doing, Tim?
Really good. How are you?
Welcome back. It's been a while since we had you on the show.
Yeah, it has. Happy to be back. That was a lot of fun last time, so definitely glad to be back on the show.
Well, and as we rolled the dice of what date to book you on the show, we picked September 29th because we thought it'd be a fun day, and little did we know that we'd have everything to talk about.
Seriously, real busy day today.
Yeah, exactly. So this week we're going to be discussing all the news from today's press event from Google this morning, including new Nexus phones, new Chromecasts, and a ton more. We've also got the BlackBerry and Black phones, in case you didn't have enough phones in your hands, and an increase to app limits in the Play Store. You're watching All About Android, and it starts right now.
Coming up in the news, more hardware than you could shake a stick at. Stay tuned for Android news.
So the majority of our Android news today is going to be dominated by a press event that was held earlier this morning in San Francisco. I was not cool enough to be invited, but luckily Flo was, correct?
Yes. I was cool enough to be invited.
But I was at home sitting in front of YouTube. Tim, I imagine you were home sitting in front of the YouTube as well?
Oh, yeah, definitely checked out the live stream all morning, writing notes down and everything.
So a lot was announced. This was the big announcement of phones and Chromecasts and things like that, all leading up towards the holiday season. So, Flo, why don't you kick things off and tell us what we got from Google today?
Okay, we have a lot of stuff, and this is probably going to sound like a spec dump, but that's what you get when you have a bunch of new Nexus hardware.
Well, but I think there's enough to talk beyond the specs too. I think some major things happened. Yeah,
absolutely. So first off, the presentation started, and Sundar Pichai, my homie, came out, and that was great. It's always great to see him. I was really happy about that, and I clapped. I just want everybody to know. I know you're not supposed to clap as a journalist at these events, but I always clap for Sundar because I have so much respect for him as a person. After that...
were you the only person clapping?
I was clapping like...
So you golf clapped.
I just love him so much. I wish that I was a family member of his, which probably is creepy. But anyway, after that, we got the Nexus 6P and the Nexus 5X were announced. The Nexus 5X is made by LG. The 6P is made by Huawei. One is bigger, one is smaller, one is a little more premium, one kind of feels a little like fan service, which is awesome. It's pretty much a reprise. Well, I can't say it's pretty much. Basically, Google went back to LG, said, hey, the Nexus 5 sold so dang well, we want you to make us another phone. So LG made the 5X, and it's this light as a feather, 5.2 inch phone with a 1080p screen. It's got a Snapdragon 808, 2 gigs of RAM, 2700 milliamp battery pack. Perhaps the most interesting thing about it, though, is the rear facing 12.3 megapixel 12.3 megapixel camera. You'll have to excuse me. I am bilingual. That is my excuse when I get words wrong. But the 6P also has the same rear-facing camera. And Google says this is one of the best cameras it's ever made, which, I mean, I snapped some photos with both of them. They were quick. They were responsive. Everything looked good. But I can't wait to take this, like, into the lab and really see, like, how it, you know, competes against the GS6 or the G4, even though it's smaller in megapixels.
Cool.
Yes.
So, so I was excited as a Nexus 5 owner. This was, you know, as you know, we've been talking for the past couple of weeks. I am on the market for a new phone, and I've been waiting to see what emerged if we would actually get a Nexus 5. And I was psyched to see this. Tim, what did you make of the Nexus 5?
I mean, there's a lot of things I liked about it, a lot of things I didn't like. Flo, I'm super jealous you got hands on with it already.
I'm so
I only get
tired.
To, got to see it through the screen.
So
yeah, I can
tired.
Imagine. I can't believe you're even here with us right now. I thought it was pretty interesting. Actually, I'm a little upset they had even a 16 gigabyte model. And honestly,
another friend of mine tweeted and they said, stop making phones with 16 gigabytes. And I have a 16 gigabyte Nexus 5 and it's been fine. I mean, why not provide a lower cost option? I mean, the Nexus 5 with 16 gig is $379 versus $429 for the 32 gig. I stream so much media. I don't need 32 gig.
Yeah, I think the main reason I say that is because since with the better camera and 4K shooting in 4K, it's so much space in general. Yep. I think that's really the main reason in the difference between this Nexus 5 and the previous one.
Yeah. I will say, after saying that I don't need 32 gig, that for the past 2 weeks, I've been constantly getting Google Photos going, can we delete 800 mega photos that you don't need on your phone? Right? So maybe I do need the more space. I just don't realize it. So, cool. So, and then there was also the Nexus 6P, Flo. So what about that one?
Yeah, so the Nexus 6P, it's a bigger phone, as I mentioned, 5.7-inch Quad HD display. It is super nice in person, and I'm so glad that Google made, like, a premium Nexus. I don't really regard the Nexus 6 as a premium Nexus, the one from last year. It just didn't feel like one, but this one does. The reason I say that, and this is a weird way to gauge it, but it is so dense, it feels like if you threw it at somebody, you would probably cause them to bleed. and that's just because it just feels so good in the hand, and I really don't think it's that big. It's not as overpowering as the Nexus 6 was. It's speedy, it's fast, it's got an 8-megapixel front-facing camera. This phone starts at 32 gigabytes and goes up to 128, which will prove really helpful if you do plan on shooting all those, like, 4K videos. It's, you know, got a fingerprint sensor on the back, and I'm so sorry, I forgot to mention that on the 5X as well. Both of them have fingerprint sensors on the back. I tried to use them, even though my fingerprint, you know, wasn't registered with it, just to kind of feel the vibration. And it's so much easier than using the fingerprint sensor on, like, the GS6, which is the one that I've been using, you know, primarily. Also, both these phones have USB-C fast charging, which is finally. I really appreciate this little bit of shade thrown at Apple during the presentation, by the way. I believe it was David Burke. He said that these phones will charge half an hour, it'll charge faster than the iPhone 6S. So I thought that was awesome that they threw a little shade at that. No mention of NFC, though.
Yeah, I noticed that. And we want to thank Miriam, who was at the event as well. She provided that video that we just rolled, and she's here taking a picture of me. so she was at the event as well, and she got that video that we saw. And I actually noticed that they lots of mentions of Android Pay with both phones, but never mentioned NFC as a specific spec. So the assumption or the question is that do these phones have NFC? But if they're talking about Android Pay, they must have it. And is it at the point now where Google just NFC is, you know, it's got to be on the phone no matter what, so why even mention it? Tim, what did you make of that?
Yeah, interesting, especially because with phones now, some of them coming out without NFC, it's one of those things when I'm reviewing phones, it was never something I mentioned, but just recently you've got the OnePlus 2 not including NFC, and it's something you actually have to mention in your review. But for me, it was always something I never mentioned because it was always assumed that it was going to be there. And I think I would have just mentioned it if it wasn't there.
Right.
But obviously, Google's not going to announce, hey, we don't have NFC. But I mean, in general, I think it's just kind of an assumption that it's going to be in the phone, especially with all the Android Pay talk.
Yeah, with so much mentioning of the fingerprint sensor and then using the fingerprint sensor to unlock the phone to use Android Pay, it's got to be in there. But I didn't see it on any documentation. And Flo, I don't know if there was any mention of it at the event or.
Nobody mentioned it, and I honestly, I was skimming through the specs today online, and I don't remember seeing that. I'm sure there's got to be an NFC chip. Yeah. You can't have Android Pay without NFC. Like, there has to be. And they were talking about it so much. Like, by the way, don't forget Android Pay is coming and you can use his fingerprint sensor.
Yeah, it does have NFC. Yeah, I have full specs on my website, and it's got NFC.
Yeah. Nice. I forgot to mention how much they cost.
Yes.
Which is perhaps the most important thing of all. Which I have to admit, I forget to think about because, and I'm so sorry, it's because I get these phones in for review and I probably shouldn't say that out loud, but I did. So the 6P is going to cost $499 for 32 gig, $549 for the 64 gig, and $649 for the 128 gig. It's on sale for pre-ordered. You can pre-order it right now in the Google Play Store. It's available in US, UK, Ireland, and Japan, I believe, are the only places you can pre-order right now. And then the 5X is $379 for 16 gigs, $429 for 32 gigs, also available for pre-order right now. I wonder if the store is broken at all today.
I didn't see
anything on Twitter.
Yeah, I was on the store earlier this afternoon when I was buying the other device that they announced, which we'll talk about in a moment. I wasn't buying a phone, but it seemed to be just fine. So the other thing I want to touch upon was they mentioned who was it, the Google VP of Engineering, Dave Burke, said this is the who did the presentation, which I thought was interesting. Sundar came out, did a very nice intro, and then handed it off to a parade of Googlers.
I loved that. Yeah. He's being such a leader, which is what he is. Yeah. He's a naturally born leader.
Oh my gosh.
He's full of ideas.
But it was great to see such an array of men and women, and it was a very diverse presentation. I thought it was good. But back to the camera, he said that as you mentioned, Flo, this is the best camera we've ever put in a Nexus phone. I know it's been a hot topic here on this show, and actually Miriam stepped out of the studio, so she'd be here ranting, though. The cameras don't have OIS, and Dave Burke made a specific call out to that in the presentation where he was talking about the sensor that they were using, the Sony sensor that's typically used in digital cameras and video cameras, therefore eliminating the need for OIS. And
I did not catch that.
Yeah. And they showed this kind of comparison of photos taken of the Nexus 6, the iPhone 6 Plus, and then the Nexus 6P, and highlighted the 37 minutes after sunset photo as being the best of the bunch, although I felt as if the 23 minutes after sunset photo wasn't the best of the bunch there.
Yeah.
So what do we make of the camera? Flo, you got to play with it.
It's the 5X is had slightly slower shutter speed is what I remember. I didn't know what to pinpoint it on. I thought maybe it had to do with HDR or something, or the fact that we were in a dimly lit room. The 6P was super quick, super fast. I actually took a bunch of pictures of Android Police's Dave Ruddock. I know he appreciated that. He's like, hey, be my model. And he came out. He looked good in the pictures. Yep. It looked like a not a well-lit photo, but you know when you're taking like a kind of an artsy photo in the dark and you want the light just kind of like hanging on your face like that, that's what it looked like. It didn't look grainy or gross, which is honestly what I'm used to with Nexus devices.
And that's what they called out was the taking shots outside in the sunlight and well-lit or all well and good. It's taking those photos indoors in low light, which is the real question.
And they had a statistic, which unfortunately I buried in my notes, but I think it was like we spend so many hours indoors, it's ridiculous to think that the only place we should be taking photos is outside.
Yeah.
Because we're indoors all the time with our families, our pets.
You said like 20 hours indoors or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's true.
And that's my biggest complaint. I mean, since, you know, as I mentioned, I've been on a Nexus 5. And if you follow me on Instagram, you see that at least a third of my photos are in clubs taking photos of bands. And I just took one Sunday night and it was just a mess of, you know, blotchy color pixels because the lighting is so dark and it's the, you know, that stage lighting and all that sort of stuff. And I just want to take a good picture of a band once. That's all I want to do. And so I'm hoping that this does the trick if I end up getting this phone. So I don't know.
Well, and if you drop this phone on the floor.
Yes.
And break it because it is trampled by a mosh pit. then you can, I'm just trying to go back to my Warped Tour days. Then you can use Nexus Protect, the Nexus Protect plan. I actually, my first thought when I heard of this, So actually, let me explain what it is first. It's 2 years of protection from damage. You get 24/7 claims filing with Google, which is awesome. It's like your little personal Allstate agent for your phone. The phone is shipped the next business day. You don't even have to like sit and wait around for a new phone. It's $69 for the Nexus 5X and $89 for the 6P. And you know what? This reminded me a little bit of HTC's uh-oh protection.
Yep.
I know that was like something that they were really pushing this year to try and sell the one. And then I saw Google came out with that and I was like, oof.
Yep.
That is really good move, what Google did.
Yeah.
That's really good. And that's going to get a lot of like commoners over to it too. Like common smartphone users, not commoners.
Isn't HTC's protection free though?
Yeah, it is. But I mean...
It's an HTC phone.
So $69 or $89, is that something that you would pay for?
Yes. I pay monthly for insurance on my phone right now.
You see, whenever you like buy something, they're like, oh, do you want to pay? I'm like, nope. And I just say no across the board.
You have to pay a freaking deductible. So, yeah. I mean, it's just like regular car insurance,
yeah.
Except for a phone.
Yeah. So, Tim, would you pony up for it?
I think so. Especially unless you're someone that loses your phone a lot. I mean, if you have a track record of losing your phone, because usually insurance will cover lost phone or damaged phone. But yeah, I think so. I think it's worth it for 2 years of coverage if you plan on keeping your phone for 2 years.
Right.
I mean, if you're planning on getting rid of it after 6-8 months, then it might not be worth it.
Yeah, and I had a great track record of not breaking phones up until this past year where I'm on my third Nexus 5 due to shattered screens. So maybe I should do it. I don't know.
You know, I don't feel bad. There's plenty of other people out there who are like on their third or fourth Nexus 5s.
Oh, I know. I lived through Jason Howell's Nexus 6 shattering on the pavement. I was here for that. So, yeah. Also, these new phones are compatible with Project Fi, right?
That is very true.
Yep.
Yes, that is very true. You know, the reason I let Project Fi slip from my mind is because I haven't signed up for it yet.
Well,
I'm still not.
I don't know. Project Fi kind of scares me. I mean, Tim, have you played Project Fi yet? I don't.
I haven't. I have an invite to it. I want to do a video series on it, just kind of covering what it does and just my experience with it. Because I live in Chicago right now, so I think it'd probably be smart of me. But I think I might try it for a month and then just do a video review on it.
Yeah,
you should go on vacation and take it overseas if you can. Really,
that'd be a good idea too.
Sure, Tim, just go to Europe. Just go for it. But my only worry is I'm on such a great grandfathered plan from T-Mobile. I don't want to abandon that. So it's a big deal to switch that. But anyway, and they also announced the Marshmallow is indeed coming, right?
Flo? It is coming. It is coming so soon. It is coming. It's coming next week.
Yeah.
Next week. It's going to be here next, well, for Nexus phones.
So it's deploying next week for the Nexus 5, 6, 7, 9, and the Nexus Player will get Marshmallow. And the Nexus 6P and 5X are all shipping with Marshmallow as well, so, right out of the gate, which is fantastic. So, cool. Well, so moving on, the phones weren't the only things that were announced. We talked about it last week. The leak was there, and Flo's got one at her desk with her, but they announced the new Chromecast. Which is a new disc-like shaped dongle. There you go. There it is.
Enterprise.
So this new round design enables support of three antennas for improved Wi-Fi support with 802.11 AC and supporting both 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz bands. It comes in three colors, standard black or lemonade, which we see right there, which she's hypnotizing us with, or coral. And lemonade and coral are both Google Store exclusives. And so if you want to get those, you got to order them from the Google store. So HDMI out and micro USB for power. They also introduced the concept of fast play, which is with participating applications, will eliminate the dreaded buffering. So, and the example they showed in the presentation was Netflix. They pulled up Kimmy Schmidt and they pulled it up on an old Chromecast and the new Chromecast and the fast play kicked right in. The video started playing as soon as you press play, which is awesome. But I got the sense that it's going to require the developers to do some implementation on their end for that to happen. And they also announced a new Chromecast app, which I've already updated and downloaded on my phone. which has got discovery options. So it actually looks at the apps on your phone that has Chromecast support and serves up content almost like a TV guide or a way to discover new shows when you say, hey, what do we want to watch? And it's also going to have more feeds for photos. They talked about adding new content sources as well as Facebook and things like that, so you can get different photos in the pause state. And it's still just $35. And in fact, I put my money where my mouth is, and I literally just got my email from the Google store telling me that mine has shipped. So I bought one of these in the coral color, and I should have it in a couple of days, so I'm excited. Flo, did you get to see the Chromecast in action, aside from playing with it?
I did not, unfortunately. Yeah. Actually, I haven't had a chance to play with it because I have to give it to the people who are covering it here. So I can't. Yeah. I didn't really have time. Yeah, I have to leave it here at the office, so I don't get to take it home with me either, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But when they're all done with it, I'm hoping to take it home and like plug it in. I'm actually holding the other.
Sorry. One, which is the Chromecast Audio, which they announced, which is looks like a little mini record player with little grooves. And this basically, what Chromecast does for video, this is basically what it does for audio. It can connect to your stereo and allow you to stream songs and playlists from Google Music to whatever speakers that it is plugged into. It supports three connectors, which I was happy to hear about. It's got the standard headphone phono jack, an RCA jack, as well as optical, which for you audiophiles know that you've got to use your optical cables. It also supports guest access, so if your friends come over, they can add music, they can add songs to the playlist, that sort of thing. And they also announced, which we talked about last week as well as rumored, was the Spotify integration. Is that Spotify is going to be available, supporting Chromecast as well as Chromecast Audio with neat little interactions where you can, you know, stream your playlist, stream your friends' playlist, that sort of thing. And the Chromecast Audio is also $35, and I ordered one as well too, and that shipped just now too. So Tim, are you gonna upgrade to the new Chromecast or get the Chromecast Audio?
Yeah, I bought both of them. So I haven't gotten shipping notifications yet, unfortunately. But yeah, I don't know if I mainly got the new Chromecast for TV, the HDMI one, just to kind of do a comparison video and a review video. I don't know if I'd actually upgrade, though. I mean, I've been pretty pleased with my current Chromecast, and it didn't really offer any new functionality, I guess, other than just kind of improved performance. And okay.
What about that fast play?
Yeah, that's true. That does look pretty cool. So, I mean, I'll try it out, and then I'll see if it's actually worth it. And then when it comes to the Chromecast Audio, that's actually something I had talked to my roommate about, and I thought that Google should have come up with that maybe like 2 months ago, because I bought a whole sound system for my apartment, and I tried to put, we would have parties or people over, and we'd want to play music through the Chromecast because it was all hooked up, but it would take over the TV because some people would want to play Xbox or something like that. So I was thinking, so I actually went out and bought a Bluetooth adapter that I plugged into my my receiver. So instead of just Chromecasting it, we would use it with essentially the same exact thing, but with Bluetooth.
Right.
So I kind of have something similar to that. So it'll be interesting to see if that's something I want to replace, because I see some nice functionality. Like they mentioned how with notification sounds and things, they would minimize your audio. I don't know if you remember seeing him say something like that, and just other downsides of Bluetooth in general. So I think it's going to be something that is probably going to be a little bit better than that Bluetooth adapter I have.
Yeah, no, I jumped all over this because I've got a nice stereo. I've got really nice speakers that I took the time and researched and want to get ones for that are good for both music and watching movies and that sort of thing. And I use Google Music with Chromecast from the browser, and it's a pain in the butt. I mean, it works, but it's not perfect. And then when I use it Chromecast from my phone, that exact same problem. If I get a text message or the phone rings or whatever, that comes through too. And it didn't feel right. And I forget the name of the gentleman, the Googler who was presenting about it, but he kept on using that phrase, like, it just works, or it's just the right way to do it. It seems like they knew audio wasn't perfect with Chromecast, and so this is the attempt to make it perfect. And so, you know, I jumped all over it. It is kind of funny though, because if you remember back to the little orb, the Nexus Q, the device that never came out, which I still have. I still have, by the way, and I will sell to someone if they want it.
You just painted gold.
Yeah. I keep waiting for it to actually be worth something, but I feel like everybody's forgot about it. But yeah, there it is. Yeah. That'll the shot put ball. But a lot of the functionality of this is what what I felt the Chromecast audio was doing, you know, like the ability to plug into the stereo system, to stream audio, to do the kind of collaborative playlists and all that sort of stuff. So it's neat to see that that kind of concept be recycled finally into their hardware. So cool. So moving on, we also got an announcement related to Google Music. I was delighted to hear someone from Google say the word emo and the Smiths in their presentation.
Did you see the meme there, though?
I did, unfortunately. I'm just going to stop.
Before it was cool.
Yeah. I just did this.
Some of those jokes they had today were a little brutal.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard to entertain a room like that, I guess.
Right? Oh, yeah.
But they announced a family plan for Google Music now. So $14.99 a month allows you to get up to 6 users, so that if your significant other is into hip hop, like the Wu-Tang Clan, like her example, and you're into emo, you can have separate accounts, all complete with separate recommendations and things like that. So it's basically gives you a family plan for Google Music, which is great. And then they also did a very long presentation, I thought, on Google Photos, building on the launch of Google Photos from I/O, adding more functionality to it. They've introduced the ability for shared albums, so you can have collaborative photo albums that can be shared. So if myself and Flo went to the same event, we took pictures, I could start an album, send her the link, she can add her photos, and then you could share them with friends, which is pretty cool, as well as improved search via compound searches. And finally, Chromecast support, which is something that I thought was missing from when they announced it at I/O. I didn't quite understand why that wasn't there. Tim, what'd you make of these family-centric kind of software updates?
It's cool. I liked it a lot. I especially like the one with photos. I guess when it comes to the Play Music, I don't see myself using it just because I don't really have 6 people to share an account with like that. So, but I mean, it's a decent deal. Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe in the future it's something I could look into. I think it's a pretty solid deal, though, if you have a group of people that want to get in on something like that.
Well, I think the key there is the separate, it's, you know, the user profiles, because Lord knows I wouldn't want somebody to, without my taste in music, to be using my account and messing up my radio, you know, all this kind of stuff. So it's the idea of building those kind of user profiles within the application, which is neat.
Yeah, it's just like my Netflix account. I have my mom's on my Netflix account, and I'm really happy she has a separate account because I don't want her recommendations of shows coming up on my account. It's really nice to be separate.
Yeah, you gotta keep those Real Housewives shows away from our our feeds.
Hey, more Housewives, please. Which is what I was asking for when they kept talking about sports during the presentation.
Well, so that was a ton that was announced, but there was one more thing, right?
To borrow a phrase from everyone's favorite computing company. Anyway, there was the Pixel C, which I also call the Microsoft Surface competitor. I don't know if it's a killer yet.
So the C stands for competitor.
Yes. Well, yeah. And it also stands for convertible.
Yeah.
Convertible. Yep. It's a new tablet aimed at productivity. It's also what I believe the Nexus 9 should have been, but we can get into that later. It's got a 10.2-inch display. Its aspect ratio is similar to a piece of paper. It's running on an NVIDIA Tegra X1 quad-core processor with 3 gigs of DDR4 memory. It runs Marshmallow, and it comes with an attachable full-size Bluetooth keyboard that snaps on via magnets. How do they work? They work this way. It's going to be $499 for 16 gigs, $599 for 32 gigs, and $149 for the keyboard. And the keyboard, which is awesome, actually charges when it's folded up into the tablet. I'm so glad it's not a pencil that you plug in to the tablet to charge it, because that would be weird.
One correction on the pricing, that, and that was my bad, Flo. I'm sorry. It was $499 for the 32 gig and $599 for the 64 gig.
32, 64. Yeah.
So many numbers today.
But I was just reading Ron's notes.
Yeah, sorry. My bad.
Sorry, there are a lot of numbers today. I mean, 6P, 5X.
So did you get to see one of these firsthand at the event? Or?
I saw it. I didn't touch it because I was just trying to get my stuff with the phones, but I saw it. I saw the demo of it. And honestly, the keyboard. So what they did is they actually shaved a little bit of the keyboard, like your normal laptop keyboard, just kind of try and fit all those keys in there. But it's still not super comfortable to type on. You know, granted, you only have a couple of minutes with these hands on to really like type something. You're not typing an essay or an article or whatever, but usually those keyboard, those tablet keyboard add-ons, they're not, you know, they're not really they're not exactly like a laptop keyboard.
Right. Well, that's what I've always felt about the Surface keyboard is that it's, you know, like it feels a little too chiclety toy kind of for me.
Yeah, and it doesn't have the same like feedback as a laptop keyboard. It's just not, it's not going to replace it for me, quite frankly. So.
What do you make of all this, Tim?
I'm a little torn. I think the thing I'm most torn about is that it's running Marshmallow and people are trying to call it a competitor with, I guess, the Windows tablets. It's just, it's hard for me because it's not really optimized. I mean, Marshmallow in general is just not optimized for tablets. You don't have dual window mode, anything like that. And then you also have the Chrome OS, which it's not, when it comes to apps and stuff, it's just not as good as the Android operating system. So, but it's better in certain desktop applications. So I guess I think they really need to advance, but they also were talking about how they're going to update it every 6 weeks. They're going to have an update for it. So I don't know if they're going to try and implement other software features to it separately or what they meant by 6 week updates or if that's something they're going to do with all of their new Nexus devices.
Yeah, it could be part of the security updates that they talked about and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I was a little, I mean, I thought this was interesting. I think for one, maybe I've underestimated the power of Microsoft, but coming out of Apple's event a couple of weeks ago with the newspaper-sized iPad, which, by the way, someone sent me a photo of someone taking a picture of the Hollywood sign in L.A. with one of the new iPads, so it's starting. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Right? I'm telling you. But I didn't realize that both Apple and Google, are they that concerned with the productivity marketplace on tablets? Like, is
they're concerned with the Surface?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like, is the Surface that successful? Like,
it is, isn't it? I thought. Yeah, I think it is. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, so many people use
it. Like a great device. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good for college kids. Good for professionals.
Scared about Windows 10 Mobile. Honestly, I think that's something that they need to be worried about.
Are you being facetious or serious?
No, I'm actually being serious.
Yeah.
I really like the direction Windows is going with. Just their Xbox integration with Windows 10. I actually do like Windows 10 to a certain extent. And if they do Windows 10 Mobile correctly and they integrate it all, Xbox, your PC, everything, I really think it could be a solid competitor. And they get app developers on board. That's another huge thing for them.
Well, we know that Satya Mania is running wild. So maybe it is. Maybe it is a threat. But I don't know. Pixel C seems cool. But I guess, there is a little brand confusion on the name. It would have been nice to see a new like a Nexus 10 or something like that. But I don't know. Who knows? Cool. So that sums up the event of the morning, which is quite exhausting. But Google, I thought the Google event would be the last one that we were through this and now we can get ready for the holidays. But we got one more announcement to come, right, Flo?
We have one more announcement. But it's not like a real event like you're thinking. It's just going to be on the internet, and it's HTC's next phone on October 20th. We're going to find out what HTC's next phone will be. I have no idea where to even start with this one because, honestly, this came out of left field for me. I found out about it as I was on my way back from the event.
Yep.
I think it's a smart move to have an online event because at this point in time, HTC, we don't have as much, we don't really know what to expect anymore from you guys with the year that has been. So I'm going to be very curious to see what it is that they're going to announce on October 20th. And, you know, I hope this is like kind of a nice do-over for the M9 that came out earlier this year. Hopefully, maybe. That's what I'm hoping for.
We'll see. Tim, what are your feelings on HTC these days?
Oh, man. They need to do something different. Honestly, they're just continuing on the same path, and it's not working for them. This new device, I don't know. It came out of left field, honestly, like you said. I don't know what it's going to be, but I think if they need to do something, it needs to be something completely different, and their cameras just need to be better in general.
I agree with both your points. I just found it odd, like, of all the days to announce this, your event's not till October 20th. Let this breathe a little, you know? Like,
it's like sending a press release on Apple event day. Like, you just don't do that. Everyone's busy.
Yeah.
You just don't, you know?
And it's not like they didn't know this event was, I don't know, anyway. So that's coming, so we can look forward to that. All right, so that was a lot of announcement news. And before we move on, I wanted to make sure we touched on one bit of news that happened last week that we didn't get a chance to talk about. Which, before I move on, actually, Flo, this is a big deal. Actually, Google made an announcement on the morning of the show, whereas typically these sort of announcements happen tomorrow on Wednesday. So if Sundar or the Google PR team are watching, I just wanted to personally thank you guys for making these announcements when we're able to talk about them.
Sundar did it for me. Yeah. I mean, let's be real. I shook his hand once.
He knows how much you love him.
You don't even understand. Yep. Well, I can't even get into it. All right. Sorry. Yeah. Go on.
So good job. Good job, Google. Anyway, last week the news kind of surfaced that there's some antitrust investigation going on in relation to Google, specifically on Android. The FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, reached an agreement with the Justice Department to investigate Google and specifically Android to see if it perhaps is a monopoly or some sort of antitrust kind of case that's going on. And this comes 2 years after the FTC closed a separate investigation into Google's search business and declared that it wasn't. And so this is this potentially could be a big deal and begs the question. And Tim, I'm really curious what you think about this. Is Android a monopoly? Is Google being antitrustful in their practices around Android?
I really wish that article, I was reading through it, I wish it would have given some specific examples of what they are considering antitrust or just, I mean, it says they're like blocking out competition. I wonder how they're doing that, especially with their open source model. I've been trying to sit here and think of ways that they can actually do that. But I know they talked about how it's not really considered Android without the Play Store, and they have control over the Play Store, I guess. So that could be one direction where it's like, oh, well, you can use Android, but we have the Play Store and all these apps and we control all of them, especially when it comes to Google Maps, everything like that, especially with all the prior debacles with Apple and how they weren't allowing their apps on Apple and all that stuff. Yeah. So I could potentially see how certain things they do could bring this about, but I'm still curious as to what specific examples they're citing.
Well, yeah, and that's what the investigation probably will yield. But I'm sure arguments will be made about the separation of the open source applications and the ones that are only available through Google and the Google Play Store, and like the forking of the AOSP versus the apps that we currently use on Nexus devices and things like that. I'm just speculating. I don't know. Flo, have you heard anything about this thing?
I think it's all hootenanny. I completely agree with Tim. Like, I want to know what it is that they're doing. I mean, come on, they give you source code so you can make your own mobile operating system if you want. Like, any kid in a basement, fine, it doesn't have Google Play services, so what? Yep. They give you that option. If you want it, go to Google. If you don't want it, go do it on your own. I think it's all, again, hootenanny.
It's all legal hootenanny. So
I don't even know if that's the right terminology for it.
I feel like a hootenanny is a little more fun. Yeah. I just feel like that's more of a good time. I don't know. I just so.
Well, today it's a bad thing.
We'll think of a different word. But either way, we'll be keeping an eye on this, and I'm sure it will be talked about and dragged out because Lord knows we need another legal case to talk about when it comes to technology.
Just lawyers need a paycheck too. Come on, they need to.
All right, so I'm going to give Flo a little break here. We're going to thank one of our sponsors of this episode. We want to thank Little Bits for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And if you haven't heard of them yet, Little Bits is moving electronics design and creation from the hands of experts to everyone. Little Bits lets everyone use electronics as modular building blocks. Little Bits snap together with magnets so you can create circuits in seconds. It's perfect for families to build things with their kids, kids at heart, coders, hardware hackers, makers, artists, designers, engineers, and students. With Little Bits, you can get your dog to text or make a robotic snack server. Why buy electronic toys or gadgets when you can invent them yourself? They've got modules ranging from the very simple, like power sensors and LEDs, to the very complex, like wireless and programmable sensors. Over 60 modules can be used in virtually limitless creative combinations. We live in a tech-driven world, but many people don't know how electronics work. Little Bits makes it easy to understand the world around us. Just imagine what you can make, and you can do it with Little Bits. So Little Bits has got a ton of these awesome kits, and I got right here the Space Kit, which was developed in partnership with NASA. And hey, we heard this week that there might be water on Mars. The space is cool again. The Martian is coming out this week. So now's the perfect time to get, if you're one of your kids or students or anybody that you know is interested in space, to get their hands on this Little Bits Space Kit. Developed in conjunction with NASA, has got all the parts that you need to build cool stuff that is related to space. And it's got some cool history bits, like here, the text here is talking about walking on the moon with Neil Armstrong. And it's just really cool. It gives you this great manual of ways to think like an astronaut and think like a scientist, and with cool instructions on how to build a wave generator. Or let's see right here, we got a satellite dish. Make a satellite dish. How cool is that? So here's the deal. LittleBits is offering new customers $20 off their first kit. Just go to littlebits.com/android and you get free shipping in the U.S. That's littlebits.com/android. And we thank them for their support of the show. And we thank them for educating the future, our future children. We need coders. So, all right. As if you didn't get enough, let's go into hardware. Well, I can't think of any better way to follow up all the great Nexus phones than talking about BlackBerry.
I could think of a lot of better things we could be doing right now, but you're having me talk about BlackBerry, so I'm going to do it. I don't know if you guys have been hearing all the rumors about the BlackBerry Priv, I don't know what to call it, but it's a little slider phone. It's focusing on privacy and productivity, which is what BlackBerry keeps trying to focus on. John Chen, CEO John Chen, had said that Priv will be the solution for smartphone users who are learning daily of the lack of privacy they have on their current devices. Thank you for reminding us. Priv will be the answer for former BlackBerry users. This just like is so good. I can't not laugh. Who missed the physical keyboard but needed apps. Yes, we needed apps like 2 years ago, dude. And we're responding to current and prospective BlackBerry users, people we want to reel back in, who need it all. Choice, innovation, security, privacy, and productivity. And he went on to say, this is really good. I have to read it. BlackBerry is a new company. We have a new life. And we plan to continue to surprise our customers and the industry. This is just the latest move along that path. Which is fine. Whatever. They're trying to do what they can to revive themselves. I get it. Quite honestly, every time I see one of you tweet about the BlackBerry Priv, I completely ignore it. And part of that is just because I think they really wasted a good opportunity. You know, they were emulating Android apps anyway with BlackBerry OS, BBOS 10 or whatever the heck it was called. I even forgot the name. And they missed an opportunity there. You know, they should have. Anyway, there's.
I really like.
It's been a whole show talking about this, by the way.
Well, I don't know if we need that. I really like the on their announcement page, the BlackBerry logo and the Priv word and privacy. I get Priv privacy is fine, but privilege. I feel like that's a loaded word that really.
Yeah,
is just,
I didn't even like think about that. Yeah. I thought it was just like a weird. I actually didn't even know that meant privacy. I thought it was like just a weird name. I thought it was like trying to make it sound, you know, really like. Like high end, you know. I actually kind of like some of the renders that I saw of the phone because I would love to have a keyboard back. I am the worst at typing.
It's
I think there's official images out now, isn't there?
I think there are. It came out with the release. I think the link that we had didn't have them, but I think they're out there. I'll try to find them right now. But the thing is that we joke about. Here we go. Here, Brian, I'm going to throw them in the chat for you. You can check them out. These are the first official images of the Priv. It's just such a weird word. But, and it's very thin. I'll give it credit. But we joke about BlackBerry, and I'm guilty of it as well, too. I think BlackBerry is dead in the water. But it's always caveated with going, yeah, but I'd love a physical keyboard. You know, because I would love a physical keyboard. I mean, Tim, would you use a BlackBerry to get a physical keyboard, or have you moved on?
So. Yeah? No. My first Android phone had a physical keyboard, and I really liked it.
Yeah.
Definitely. I also want to make note that image, it kind of looked like a Galaxy S6 Edge. Did you kind of
see that? Yeah.
Little edge on the side of it.
It's got that curve. Yeah, definitely.
Look at
that.
But no, I mean, I like physical keyboards a lot, actually, especially when I'm typing long emails or maybe writing an article or something like that. Quick texting, yeah, I can just deal with this on-screen keyboard. But when it comes to, I guess, long texting, I really like a physical keyboard. So hopefully if they do this correctly, maybe throw stock Android on a device with solid specs, I think it could potentially be successful.
Exactly. If they throw stock Android and if they are committed to timely updates, that's going to be really important.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, but with a commitment to privacy and security and things like that, they're not the only ones in the space. And we actually saw Silent Circle release the Black Phone 2. So if you're concerned about security and privacy, this might be a phone to consider as well, in addition to the Priv. So the Black Phone 2 it sells for $799, so it's pricey. And it's a 5.5-inch screen similar to the Nexus 6 or iPhone 6 Plus, 1920 by 1080 resolution. It's got a 1.7 gigahertz octa-core Qualcomm Snapdragon 615 processor, 3 gig of RAM, 32 gig of storage that's expandable to 120 gig via micro SD card, 13-megapixel rear-facing camera, 5-megapixel front-facing camera. But now here's the interesting part where you guys are talking about running stock Android and that sort of thing. The Black Phone 2 is running Silent OS, which is Silent Circle's own fork of Android 5.1.1 Lollipop with added security features. It's got the Security Center app, which gives the user controls over apps and services. It's got a Spaces feature that allows users to create isolated secure areas similar to user profiles if you want to have like a work profile and a personal profile or a drug dealer profile or whatever you need. Whatever you're doing, I'm not judging.
Privacy.
Privacy. And you know, there might be concern over them having their own, you know, kind of forked version of Android. But David Perron, the Black Phone Vice President of Engineering, says any critical vulnerability that is public, we aim to fix within 72 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's intense.
Yeah. So is the Black Phone 2, it's very, industrial looking.
It's super industrial looking, but yeah. I feel like if security, no, actually I take that back. It doesn't matter if security is your main game. You might still want a really nice phone.
Yeah.
I don't know what this looks like in person, though. I'm just seeing it from what, you know, was on the internet.
Right.
So maybe it's much nicer in person. I was really bummed I never really got to play with the first Black Phone. I mean, except for when I saw it at MWC.
Yep. Tim, what are your thoughts on the Black Phone?
It's interesting.
looks like an Xperia, actually.
It kind of does. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if security is a huge thing for you, I guess I can see the smaller market for it. Or, I mean, potentially in the workplace as well, that could be something.
The government.
And I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, I never got hands-on with either the first Black Phone or the second one. But, I mean, over the pictures, it looks pretty nice. And it sounds like it has some decent specs as well.
Cool. Yeah, I don't know what to make of it either. I'm not worried about encryption, but maybe I should be. I don't know. Who knows?
Also, but you mentioned like app permissions and stuff, how they mentioned with Marshmallow going towards that as well, how it's going to let you know, hey, we need to use the microphone. Hey, we need to use the maybe your location, et cetera, with app permissions, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be a growing, you know, like it's definitely a huge part of Marshmallow. And they mentioned that in the Google presentation this morning. I feel like we got a refresher on Marshmallow, similar to the one out of I.O., but talked about how, you know, kind of contextual permissions that when you install an app, it's not going to ask you for the blanket permissions of everything. Rather, when it does check your locations, the first time it's going to say, hey, can this app check your location? Can it use the camera? Yep. Can it use the microphone? That sort of thing. So, cool. Well, phones aren't the only things that are coming out hardware-wise, right?
No, they are not.
The holiday season's approaching, and VR will not calm down.
You have to remind me about the holidays. Like, I have any Christmas shopping money. Anyway, last week, Samsung and Oculus announced the first consumer-ready version of the Oculus and Samsung Gear VR. It's only going to be $99. It's going to work with all 2015 Samsung flagship phones. It's 22% lighter. It has an improved touchpad. And it's going to take you into a world that's all your own for only $100. Of course, you are going to have to buy the phone, the premium phone that comes with it. So if you used your upgrade for another phone and you don't have a Samsung phone, that's too bad. You're probably going to have to pay like $800-$700 for one or something, unless you can find something used. So it really isn't, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's not really a huge deal unless you already own the phone. Let's be real.
I was surprised. I mean, I thought it was interesting to see that it's a more streamlined, you know, kind of goggles than the first Gear VR, which I didn't realize wasn't consumer ready. They were selling that, but I assume that's consumer. When you're selling it, I assume it's consumer ready.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, but so it's smaller. It looks like it's lighter. $100. I mean, Tim, would you spend $100 on this to go explore worlds in virtual reality?
Yeah, I think so. I really enjoy virtual reality. Actually, I was first hands on at CES. Was sitting there in the Samsung booth, padded on, and then I've Google Cardboard as well, so I've been using that. It's really cool, honestly. It's a lot of fun. It kind of gives me a headache after a little bit of time, though, so I can't do it for extended periods of time. But yeah, I think $100 is a pretty solid deal. I mean, if you already own the device, as Flo was saying, if you don't have it, you're out of luck. You got to buy S6 or et cetera.
Any it's of those a devices. Nice add-on.
Yeah, exactly.
So the clerk at AT&T will make, you know, a little bit of commission off of you getting a Gear VR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but overall, I like VR. I like the direction it's going, and I think it has a lot of potential.
Yeah, well, the product I'm waiting for, and Brian, I put the link in the chat, I'm still waiting for the ViewMaster to come out, and I just checked their website, and it's still coming soon. So,
OMG, I didn't even know that existed.
It is so cool. It's running Google Cardboard.
Throwback.
Yeah, it's running Google Cardboard, and it's using these great little discs similar to the ViewMaster thing. That's going to be the cool VR product. That's what I would spend $100 on. But yeah, so I don't know. VR is not going anywhere. I think we gotta get used to it. I don't know.
I
feel like this Christmas is going to be the Christmas of VR. There's a prediction for you. So. All right, one last little note here related to the Moto X Pure Edition, which Flo had last week, and Jason had Leo's, and we got to take a look at. A post on the where did that go? A post on the Motorola boards actually explained that the Moto X Pure is not a developer edition, so unlocking the bootloader would void your warranty, and that was posted by a Motorola employee. So folks who are looking to take the Moto X Pure Edition and root it and unlock the bootloader and replace it, that's going to void the warranty. And so something you need to be careful of and beware of.
What kind of world is this where you can customize a phone, but you can't unlock the bootloader?
Is that a big deal, though? I mean, when you're buying the Moto X Pure Edition, is the next step then to unlock the bootloader and just hack away at that? Or is that such a small audience that this is a non-issue?
It's not an issue for me. I guess if they don't
sell it as a developer edition, then it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Right.
But I mean, it's really nice that they even have something through their own website that you can unlock the bootloader. I know Samsung, they've locked all that down. So it's actually more difficult through them. But I mean, bootloader, when it comes to Motorola, it's just like go to their website. Same with HTC. They do a good job with it too. But both of them say, hey, you unlock your bootloader, it voids your warranty. So I think overall it's pretty fair considering it wasn't marketed as a developer device.
Yeah. So, all right, cool. We've been talking a lot about Android Pay the past couple weeks, and we got a bunch of emails from you guys in the community. And Flo, you want to read this email from Curtis?
Yes, I do. Yeah. This email is from Curtis Bolt. I really like your last name, Curtis. Curtis says, I would like to know what you think about Android Pay forcing people to put a lock on their phone versus what Google Wallet did, which is make you have a PIN code for the app. I don't think it is fair for Google to force people to the point of locking their phone to use the app. We would not allow that from any other developer. Why should Google be any different? My wife has decided to not use Android Pay now because of it. I am waiting to see what the price of the new Nexus phones are, as I was told from Google Project Fi tech support that the new Nexus phones will be Project Fi compatible. My current phone is the Samsung Note 2 from Sprint. So there are actually two questions in there that I shuffled in. The first one is, what do we think about Android Pay forcing you to lock things? To which I say, this is a good thing. This is a very good thing, considering that if you lose a phone and somebody takes it and tries to use that phone to pay for things, you would be really upset about that, just like you would somebody stealing your wallet, because I've had that happen to me. I've also had a phone taken from me. So I know how it feels. It's not good. I know it's really inconvenient. Trust me, I really know, because I've been using Samsung Pay with a fingerprint reader, but it's
so you don't think the fingerprint reader is enough protection from your wallet?
I think it's fine. I mean, I think, well, apparently
that's his problem, is that you already use your fingerprint to unlock the wallet, to add on a lock screen for your phone. Is that necessary?
Does that just show a lack of confidence in the fingerprint readers?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yes,
that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Or does that show a over cautiousness or overzealousness in protecting people's?
A little bit of both.
Yeah. It depends on which way.
Like, Android is a bad rap, right? I mean, amongst communities. So they're like, let's make it super secure so nobody can say anything. And then the other end, it's like, well, you could probably fake a fingerprint with like some scotch tape. So, you know, we should probably protect that. I mean, people could be evil.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I don't know where you guys net out, and Tim and Flo chime in, let me know. But having a phone without a lock screen is just insanity. If you drop your phone, I mean, I've left phones in cabs in New York City. I've dropped phones in public places. I literally dropped my phone in the Upper Haight on the street and left for 8 hours, went to a party, and came back, and thank God it was still there in the gutter. What? But I found it. But the odds of someone picking it up and walking away with it, you gotta have a lock screen. I mean,
I just locked my phone, yeah, by the way, for the very first time a week ago.
Really?
Yes. I know.
You've had phones.
Really bad practice.
Yeah.
And it's because I'm really afraid, like, with all these phones that I handle, I have to be really careful about my information being out there. And, you know, my bank freaked out last week about Samsung Pay, and I get it. There have been so many screw-ups in the security department. I honestly think it's better to be safe than sorry. I know it's a total PETA right now. I get it.
Yeah.
But better safe than sorry, right?
Yeah, and I was always someone that never used a lock screen. I just recently started now that there's fingerprint unlock because it's more convenient and it's quicker. It was always
because I find it not as convenient though, the fingerprinting.
Really?
So I went to the pattern unlock.
Okay, that's always
felt
my backup.
More natural
it's
to me.
Fingerprint or pattern? So
yeah,
depending on what I want to use.
I would use both. I don't know. That's just me. I would just use both. Just be safe. I don't want to. I don't know. Anyway, so but yeah. So, Curtis, we're okay. I mean, generally, I'm okay with them being on the safe side of security. And I would advise your wife to kind of join us. I used Android Pay yesterday. I tested it in Walgreens, and it worked totally fine, smooth, no problem. So, anyway. All right, cool. We'll move it on. We're going to thank our next sponsor. We want to thank PagerDuty for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And PagerDuty is an operations performance platform that delivers visibility and actionable intelligence to help increase the uptime of your apps, servers, websites, and databases. If you rely on your software and services to always be up, PagerDuty is an essential tool. As the hub of your operations, PagerDuty connects all of your systems into a single view where you can see critical events across all of your monitoring tools. There are over 100 ready-to-use integrations, including Nagios, New Relic, Keynote, AppDynamics, or you can roll your own with PagerDuty's APIs. Decrease your resolution time. When an incident occurs, PagerDuty notifies the right team and member based upon on-call schedules and personalized alerting preferences. If alerts are missed, PagerDuty will automatically escalate issues to another team member until it's responded to. Dispatch alerts by automated phone calls, SMS, email, and push notifications, and resolve incidents on the go so you can live your life even when you're on call. And listen, I've been on call before, and that's the worst when you're just dreading that phone call. It's nice to know that there's a smart system behind you that's going to only alert you when you need to be. Decrease the noise. Incidents are automatically filtered and deduplicated to ensure only actionable alerts are delivered. PagerDuty's analytics tools will also identify common problems, allowing you to proactively make system improvements and prevent future outages. PagerDuty is relentless when it comes to reliability. Fully distributed across multiple data centers and multiple hosting providers, there are also multiple contact method providers per method, so you never miss an alert. You can customize it to fit how you and your team work, regardless of location or size. PagerDuty is trusted by thousands of companies, including Microsoft, GitHub, Boeing, Nike, Pinterest, and Box. Get the right engineer on the right problem for the right time. Visit PagerDuty.com/twit to sign up for a free 14-day trial, and for as little as $19 a month, you can increase your uptime with PagerDuty. And when you sign up for a new account, you also get a free t-shirt. Everybody loves a free t-shirt. So that's PagerDuty.com/twit, and we thank PagerDuty for their support. All right, let's talk a little bit of apps. Once again, can we note how wonderful Jason Howell is and how much we miss him when he's not on the show?
Miss you, Jason.
So, Flo, there's some good news for developers, right?
Good news for developers, bad news for you, the consumer, however you look at it. So developer-friendly news is that now Google has upped the app, increased the limit for APKs from 50 megabytes to 100 megabytes. The limit is meant to ensure developers code carefully and keep the size of apps reasonable, as well as making sure users don't have to wait too long for downloads and installations. The details of new limits are, it's 50 megabytes for APKs for Android 3.2 and lower, and 100 megabytes for Android 4.0 and higher. Well, game developers are going to really appreciate this. I'm sure some other developers out there will appreciate this. I'm not going to appreciate this. Do you know how long it takes to download an 80 megabyte app when you are on one bar of 4G? It's excruciatingly, painstakingly slow. Not to mention that the fact that some of our favorite smartphone vendors are now eliminating the micro SD slot. That means less room to store things. Not that it completely matters with the new versions of Android, but it's nice to know you have that little bit of backup with the expansion slot. And when you don't, and you're installing a bunch of apps that are over 50 megabytes, I don't know. Well, it's pretty tough.
Does this play right into the next bit, Robin's hands, with the backing up apps to the cloud?
Oh, it totally does. Oh, it totally does. They can totally use this for their advertising.
Yeah.
It's easy marketing.
I'm curious by this update. Is this just changing with the times, or is this in an effort to woo game developers to the Google Play Store? Tim, what do you think about that?
Probably a mix of both. I think that Google really wants to get gaming going on Android in general. And I think this is one way they can do it. This is also another reason I think that 16 gigabyte devices should just be done away with. Just another reason to add to it.
Fair enough.
But yeah, no, I mean, if you're a big gamer, you notice these games are getting, and it even says, hey, this is a large file. Do you want to only download over Wi-Fi, et cetera? And it makes sense. They're getting pretty large. However, you don't want people to include just extra files in their apps because they don't feel like cleaning up their APKs or anything, just taking up all this space. And like Flo said, it takes forever to download if you don't have a quick download option. So I don't know. I think if it actually does bring good games to the Play Store, I think it'll be worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like, you know, I want to look at some of the APK sizes of the main apps and that sort of thing, and to see how much of a hindrance, and maybe talk to some developers, see how much of a hindrance that 50 meg limit actually was, and if the breathing room of 100 meg will allow them to make better applications.
I like that. That would be a good experiment, little thing to find out, because I think we can complain about it because of our phones, but I think. I know my fiance is a developer and he talks a lot about limitations and things like that and things that bug him. So I would imagine that other developers out there will appreciate the little leeway in the room.
Well, I mean, sometimes constraints make good things. Like you need to make your code tighter and better and all that stuff. But a little breathing room helps sometimes too. So who knows?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, moving on. Also going back to Android Pay, and I just thought this was really fascinating and really, you know, kind of continue the Android Pay mystique that we've got going here on the show. A Google security engineer visited the XDA forums to answer some questions about Android Pay, specifically around why Android Pay isn't supported for on rooted devices. This engineer is Jason Clinton, and he explained that Android Pay is more than just a rebranding of Google Wallet, which is what we talked about last week about what's the difference between Google Wallet and Android Pay. He says that when you install Android Pay, it checks to make sure your device passes the compatibility test with the SafetyNet API. A rooted device doesn't conform to the security model required by SafetyNet, so it won't work. And the reason why they're using the SafetyNet API is that Google Wallet used virtual cards. So the idea being that you had your Google Wallet account, you loaded your credit cards in it, and then you went to Walgreens, you went to the store, and you tapped your phone and enabled Google Wallet. Google introduced a temporary virtual credit card that sat in between of the transaction. So the retailer was never actually getting your actual credit card number, and Google was taking all the risk of that transaction, and that's basically how Google Wallet worked. Android Pay actually tokenizes your credit card and gives your credit card information to the retailer to do the transaction, thus, you know, taking Google out of the equation and out of the risk of that. And in order to make sure that's secure, they're using that SafetyNet API. And so due to the lack of SafetyNet when you root a device, that's why Android Pay won't work. So
again, a good explanation. Good work.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that interesting? I mean, isn't that like that's a layer that you never really think of. You know, when you talk about rooting your device, everybody, you know, the folks who like to do it are, you know, whether they're real hobbyists or modders or things like that. But there are things happening under the hood that sometimes I didn't even know was happening, you know, so.
Exactly. Yeah. Samsung, I mean, when you think about it, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I was going to say Samsung Pay actually does it through Knox, does all the tokenization.
Yep.
So, and it, which like uses the hardware. BT Dubs, I've had way more success with Android Pay than Samsung Pay in this last week.
Wow.
Yeah, I have I'll pimp it later, but I have a video coming out about that that I'm really excited.
Okay,
it's
cool.
Quite hilarious.
We'll wait with bated breath for that. So.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm just pimping stuff out now.
It's
instead
all right.
Of moving on to the next news item, which is, I'm sorry, not a news item. It's an app thing. And this is something for you to try at home. Now you can use some of Google's search apps Google Now features offline. You can do things like ask it to play music, open apps, turn on or off Wi-Fi, turn up or down the volume, turn on or off the flashlight, or dim the screen. Very, very minor things, but fun to do nonetheless.
But it's interesting. It's interesting that you can do them offline now. I didn't really, you know, like those kind of functionality, you just assume you could do whenever. But I guess previously you needed to be able to connect somewhere in order to do that. But now you can control your device even when you're not like on the plane or something like that.
I'm going to try this in airplane mode tomorrow when I'm flying. I'm very curious.
I'm curious too.
Music, blast all my music to the airplane. Yeah.
I think it goes along with that Pixel C too, how they mentioned that it's got four microphones so you can yell at it across the room, et cetera. Yeah. So it's kind of like the Amazon Echo as well. I think Google needs to get into something like that because it's actually kind of a neat product. So I think might couple well with the Pixel C.
Yeah, that last Google, and this is all through the updates in the Google Search app, and I don't know if you guys have gotten the latest version, but I noticed that update was pretty big, and that actually and didn't it change the app draw as well? Because now my app draw is no longer scrolls left to right; it's just one vertical.
Up and down.
Yeah,
so you can use the search bar.
Yeah, and you can use the search bar.
Oh, and quick tip: if you press and hold the app drawer button, it brings up a quick search.
Oh, there you go. Cool!
Yeah. What?
That's awesome.
Magic.
That's awesome.
Another quick tip. Two quick tips in a row.
Yeah.
You guys like vertical better than horizontal?
Yes.
I don't know what I like better, but I'll tell you what, it threw me off because I was going like this.
Yes, because you're used to it. But you know what? Vertical is easier because when you have tinier fingers like I do on a bigger phone, I like to use a big phone, and sometimes it's hard for me to like go from one side to the other.
Yeah.
I like doing up and down. It's much easier.
Yeah, it's cool.
And searching for something.
Yeah.
It's always easier.
Neat update. Good way to go, Google. Okay, time to thank our last sponsor before we get into the arena. And we want to thank Samsung SmartThings, who are an awesome supporter of All About Android and the Twit Network. And listen, we live in a smart world. Phones, light bulbs, even cups, they're all smart. But none of these so-called smart devices work together. Samsung SmartThings changes everything by connecting all of your favorite smart devices into one easy-to-use interface that lets you easily control, monitor, and secure your home from anywhere in the world. With SmartThings, you can let your home know you're on the way, so the lights are on and the AC is cranked. It'll even unlock your door when you pull in the driveway. You can program different actions to happen when you're asleep, awake, at home, or away. Get an immediate alert on your smartphone if water is detected where it doesn't belong. With no contracts, no monthly fees, or messy installations, SmartThings is the easiest way to protect your home. And I got to tell you, this whole Internet of Things and smart connected devices is definitely the future. Through my new job at over at Drop, that's, you know, I'm kind of immersed in it and understanding how these all devices work. And you just get to do the neatest things. Being able to, you know, here I've got the Samsung SmartThings hub as well as the smart power outlets. And these are the kind of things that you can easily install in your house and allow you to, they're easy to open too. Allow you to control your devices from anywhere. And once you get a taste of what the kind of home of the future is like, you never want to go back. I mean, the ability to be on the way home and to tap my phone and tell it to turn on the lights so that I can actually see when I get home. And the way my apartment is laid out, it's a long distance from the door to the first light switch. So this is the kind of thing that I would love to plug in and be able to have my apartment all lit up and ready for me when I get home. Controlling air conditioning and heating, if you live in an area that's a big piece, it's a great way to save money. And just, you know, get greater control of your devices. For so long, these have been, you know, totally stupid, not smart devices that just plug into a wall, and now Samsung SmartThings lets you take a little more power over them and have a little more control, and it's all controlled via your device. Super cool. So right now, Samsung SmartThings is offering our audience 10% off any featured SmartThings kit and free shipping in the U.S. when you go to smartthings.com/android and use the offer code Android. So make your home a more intelligent place with SmartThings at smartthings.com/android, and don't forget to use that offer code of Android and get on board. And thank you, Samsung. All right, let's get into the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right, so last week, I think the flow effect is still in effect as we look at last week's poll.
We'll see about it after today.
Yeah, so... So last week's votes, if we could pull it up, the winning app was Pintasking, which, to be honest, is a good, was a cool app. It's cool, you know. 36% of the vote. TV Food Maps came in second with 29% of the vote. Jason's Looks of Disapproval was 22%. And my little Bandcamp app was 13%, which I feel bad. You guys should have given Bandcamp a little more of a chance, but that's okay.
I downloaded it because I found out that some of my favorite bands are on Bandcamp.
Yeah, it's cool. So Bandcamp is awesome, but that's okay. And I missed in the chat room if it happened where our scores are at, but that gives Flo a second, third win, I think, for the year. So congratulations, Flo. You're catching up.
I got to catch up a little bit.
Come a on. Little bit. A little bit. All right. So since I lost, that means I'm going to kick off the arena. And, you know, as you're looking for apps in the arena, you're often looking, you know, there's a couple of things I look for. I look for usability, functionality. Is that going to help me do something better? And then sometimes I look for kind of wacky apps that just make me laugh. And that's what this app was this week. And it is called VHS Camera. And similar to the wonderful world, I feel like we went through this phase when Android phones first came out of like retro camera and things like that, that allows you to take photos and apply kind of retro filters. Now as phones are getting better and we're getting stronger processors, we have the ability to apply that to video. And what VHS camera actually does, it allows you to take video with your phone and have it look as if it was played back on a VHS machine. God. Right.
That's amazing. Yeah. You're going to win this week.
So this is, yes, complete with tracking. So it's kind of hard to see with the lights and stuff here, but this is the view of the camera of my phone. And what you've got here is on the side, it forces horizontal viewing. So no vertical video, thank God. You can
do that in the 80s.
yeah, true. Yeah, that's a good point. You can add the date. And this is going to get a little later. So you can specify any date you want. I'll just do what today's date was. So today's the 29th, and we'll do 2015. Actually, we'll make this September 29th, 1986, the best year of my life. Okay, and then this just gets even wackier. Then what you can do is you can add an audio track. And what that will do, and I don't know if you can hear it, but it's kind of hard to hear, but it adds a little bit of that VHS hum tracking noise to the video as it records as well. And then down here on the side, you can choose the different filters. You can take regular video if you want, and you'll notice it cleans right up, and that's just a straight, you know, feed from my camera.
Boring.
But I can add the VHS filter, and that's where we start getting the tracking. I can make VHS black and white, which is pretty cool. And now this is where it gets super neat. Of course, sepia, because any camera thing needs a sepia tone. But you can do vintage, where you ever watch those old documentaries and things like that of films from the 30s with the, you know, the up and down lines and the speckles. Well, there it is on vintage. You could do 1950s, which is basically vintage in black and white. you could also do 1930s, which is kind of a little more sepia, but a little more kind of tracking lines. My favorite, 8mm mode, which puts a little black frame on it and then gives you know, kind of gives that 8mm grainy look to it, and looks like
it's the Wonder Years filter.
It's kind of like the Wonder Years filter, yeah. Now, the thing is, it's not just retro filters. They've also got a bunch of really cool video filters, such as, and I want to move my laptop so you can actually see something through the camera. There you go. Okay, cool. So this one, called Cubes, cubalizes everything on the screen. If you see, it's changed everything into squares, right? This one, Vertigo, gives you that cool 80s kind of, you know, ooh, kind of movement, you know, tracking. Chameleon, this one is interesting, is that basically it requires you to touch a screen, start recording, and touch again, and it allows a duplicate image. There's also this cool 80s radioactive mode, which if you ever went to Epcot in 1985 or 1986, you saw a lot of video that looked like that. There's this nervous mode, which kind of is a little shaky. It's hard to see about it. And then they've got a bunch of other ones where they've got mirroring. So you can do kind of, you know, the kind of two, you know, the same image replicated. It's really powerful. It's got a really bunch of cool filters that you can do to take video. It records the video, saves it to your phone, and then you can share it to Instagram or upload it to wherever you want. And so if you have the desire here, I'm going to record a little. So this is going to be really fun VHS video of my keyboard, and I'll move it around a little. But then it compresses once you're done. And then if I hit playback, you will see that it added There's the audio of me. But you see, it added the date and time, like I entered below, that old VHS-style date and time there, so it's there. And it's easy to share it directly to Instagram or through any of other apps for the sharing kind of stuff. So, yeah. So it is called VHS Camera Recorder, and it is currently, I think it's on sale. It's 99 cents in the Google Play Store if you want to download it and check it out. The question in the chat room as to whether or not you can use existing videos to apply filters. No, it doesn't. It looks like you can just record video straight from it. So that is a bit of a limitation. So, but it is neat. You can take photos with it as well, too. So if you just want to use it as your main camera, you could do that, too. So cool. Anyway, so VHS camera recorder. Have some fun with your videos. So there you go. Up next, Tim, unbeknownst to you, Tim, you did what I like to call the old stealing the app, because this was on my list of potential apps to do, and you grabbed it before I could do it. So good job, sir. All right, so tell us about this.
Sure, yeah. It's called Hopper Flights. It's free in the Play Store. It's something I just found about last week, so I haven't essentially used it yet to buy a plane ticket. But what you do is you can you pick where you're departing from, where you're landing. It only does round-trip flights at the moment, not one-way flights. And then you essentially create a trip on certain dates. And then what it does is it grabs the price of a bunch of different flights that are going on. And it keeps an eye on it for you. It lets you know what the current lowest price is, if you should wait to buy the tickets. And it gives you date ranges of when the prices will probably rise. And it says prices will vary over for my trip. I have it in January for CES. I have it. Prices will vary over the next 3 months, dropping as low as $238. So it says currently to wait. And like you see on yours, it says buy now. And you can have multiple flights going as well. So and it gives you a full list of them, how the price of them. One thing I wish you could customize is the time of your flights as well. Yeah, if I want to leave on, let's say, January 1st, then I don't necessarily want to leave at 11 p.m. on January 1st. So I wish you could customize that as well. And also one-way flights, like I said. But overall, I think this is a really neat concept, especially because I'm someone that doesn't fly a crazy amount, but when I do fly, I try and get a good deal, but I'm always curious as to when the best time to buy tickets is. So definitely an app I'm going to be using every time I need to fly, just so I can keep an eye on these flights every day. I think it sends notifications as well once a day or possibly more, just letting you know, hey, prices dropped. You might want to take a look at buying them. Or, hey, price is too high right now. You might want to wait. So overall, I think it's something that I'm going to be using every time I need to fly, I guess.
Yeah, this is as somebody who travels a lot, this is a great tool. I used to use Faircast, and then Microsoft bought it and rolled it into Bing Travel, and then they shut it down. And I've been using Google Flights actually on the web to figure out my flights. But this, you know, this interface is great. I mean, all material design, and I've already played with it a little bit. And the notifications are great, and the predictions are spot on. And what's great is they give you the list of the specific flights. So if you're loyal to a specific airline like I am, to Virgin and JetBlue, you can see the specific flights as opposed to, you know, the worst is when you do one of those searches and you get the lowest price and it's USA or United. And it's like, no, I want my airline. Yeah, so cool. So, yeah, and I guess this was already out on iOS for a little while, and this is finally ported over to Android. So it's nice to see that they finally did that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right. So that's Hopper Airfare Predictions, and that's free in the Google Play Store. All right, so Flo, you're up, and now you've got a streak, Flo. You've won twice in consecutive weeks, so no pressure here.
I'm gonna be honest and say guys, the holidays are coming, and I thought I would pick an app that would be really helpful to people. You know, it's not Material Design, and I just realized it hasn't been updated in over a year. But, you know, it's the little things, right? And this app is called Stop, Breathe, and Think. It's about helping you learn how to meditate. And it's an app that I recently discovered on my own journey to sort of sit by myself and quiet for a while and just sort of meditate on life. You know, life gets really busy, especially when you've got all these Android things that are being announced all the time. And you kind of just want to sit in silence, sit in peace, and really just enjoy being with yourself. The nice thing about this app is that it can teach you how to meditate. And then once you've sort of like gotten to a point where you feel comfortable with it, you can pick, and I just somehow made Ron sign up to start meditating, by the way. This is why I picked this app, so I could get Ron to start meditating, really.
I told you, I'm not good at that. It's too noisy. It's too noisy up here.
Yeah, it teaches you how to meditate, helps give you a list of meditations based on like the mood you're feeling. So if you're feeling really anxious, it can help you kind of like figure out how to navigate those emotions. And I realize that to some, this might sound very like hippie-ish, but you know what, guys? Meditation is really good for you. If you just take some time to stop, breathe, and listen, and just do it with your phone.
Look at the illustrations of the different modes.
I know. And another thing is, I actually think the app is really cute. I've tried a couple of meditation apps, and this one, I just like the way it's illustrated. Now I'm kind of curious to see like what Ron's gonna pick to meditate to.
Well, I'm not actually doing it. This is just an example.
Oh, I thought maybe you were just going for like your gut instinct.
Okay,
you know?
So it says based on how I'm doing today, we've curated these meditations. So pick one or play them all. Gratitude. Have you done gratitude? Gratitude for
No, I have not.
5 to 10 minutes will this is so Bay Area. Gratitude will reinforce your feelings of happiness, joy, and enthusiasm, and helps when you feel sadness or depression, or when you're just being jealous or judgmental. How does this app know me so well? So now I'm going
to
do it.
Someday, Ron, remind me to tell you about my crystals.
Yeah. All right. So is there audio?
Yes, there should be.
All right. There you go.
Close your eyes and rest your hands on your knees.
It just helps guide you. I'm totally not going to win this week's app arena.
Feel the weight of your body on your chair or cushion.
I just picked it so I can watch Ron do this.
This is so hippie.
While you are breathing deeply, relax your shoulders.
I'm sorry, Tim, you have to watch this.
Well, anyway.
Ron's facial reactions were completely worth completely worth losing this week's.
Well, no,
arena.
I know many, many people who are pro meditation and channeling and focusing and all that sort of stuff. So if this is your thing, then good on you. So
hey, Android is for everybody, okay?
Exactly.
Who likes to meditate.
It is very cute. The design is neat, and there's a little material design touches in there, so it passes on that regard. So cool. All right. So what was that called? That was what was that?
Breathe and think. It's mostly free. There's some in-app purchases, but you can get them through by meditating. You get like little coins the more you meditate.
Oh, so there's gamification to your meditation.
A little bit. Yeah, I believe there's coins. God, I hope this is the right app. Yeah, there's like little gamification to it.
All right.
So, there's a meditation bundle by Katie Lang included.
Oh, well when there's Katie Lang, why didn't you say so? All right. So, stop, drop, and roll. No, that's called Stop, Breathe, and Think. And it's free in the Google Play Store. Pretty cool. So now's the time where I need to make the poll. And so this is... The shortener doesn't seem to be working. But if you go to the All About Android community... on Google Plus, and Brian, I'll give you the URL there. And chat room, I'm going to put it into the chat room. So there you go. You can vote, choose your favorite app. There they are: VHS recorder, Hopper airfare predictions, or Stop, Breathe, and Think. And I'm going to work to get the redirect working. So those of you who are downloading or watching later on can go to AAApoll.com/233. Hypothetically, when I get it working, to go place your vote.
I was just laughing at the fact that it said 100% on my app.
Yeah. Well, that's because one person voted so far. It's
no,
hard to get
I know.
To.
I'm
yeah.
just so. Appreciate it. That one person.
Yep. All right. Well, that wraps up this week's show. Tim, I want to thank you for joining us. And I got to admit, I follow you on Twitter, and you are a busy, busy guy. So why don't you tell everybody about what you're up to?
Yeah, sure. First of all, thanks for having me on here. This is a lot of fun. Hopefully we can do this again. I make YouTube videos. Been doing it for a little over 3 years now. And I make reviews. I'll do software updates. I'll keep up to date on every device if they get a certain update, especially now that Marshmallow is coming out. I'll do tutorials as well on installing. I'll be doing Nexus tutorials for installing Marshmallow, etc. I'll be getting all the Nexus devices as well, so you expect coverage on that. Android Wear as well. So just overall, lots of coverage. I don't want to just tell you guys, hey, go subscribe to my channel. Just go to my channel, check out the content. If you enjoy the content, then you can subscribe. I'd appreciate that, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I'm trying to evolve and get more, improve my camera work as well, improve my audio, just kind of overall trying to improve just in general. I go to shows. I go to CES every year, trying to expand, go to a Mobile World Congress or other events such as what was going on today, Google's event as well. So yeah, check out my channel. It's just youtube.com/QVKing77.
Cool. Excellent. And yeah, and it's been great because, I mean, you've been on the show for a couple of years now, and it's been excellent to watch you progress and get better at what you do. And, you know, it's always fun. I check out your reviews when they come across my stream, and you do good work. So
thank you, Ron. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. Excellent. So Flo, you teased a little bit before, but what else you got coming?
I took Samsung Pay and Android Pay out for a spin this week, and I got it all on video. And I was watching some of the scenes today, and it's pretty hilarious. So when that comes up, I think hopefully it's going up next Monday. I'm still working on the review. You guys can find out what I think next week on greenbot.com and pcworld.com. And of course, you can follow me along with my own little adventures at OThatFlo on Twitter. I promise I won't ask you guys to meditate with me, but I will be meditating on the other side.
It's a personal thing, really. It's you just got, you know, like, yeah.
Well, so. If you ever want to meditate, Ron, you have a friend.
Yes. So, yeah, we missed Jason this week, but as always, this All About Android couldn't happen without the wonderful efforts of our TD, Brian.
Thanks, Ron. Yeah. I was going to say you did a great job tonight, too.
Thank you.
Man.
So did you. So did you.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of hiccups.
There weren't a lot of hiccups. We didn't have any breaking news. We didn't have any sad trombones or crickets or anything like that. So
Yeah. I was playing it pretty low-key. I wanted to make sure you felt comfortable and everything. Didn't want to throw any curveballs at you. But yeah, if you feel the need to see the other things that I do on the network, I'm doing a BYB review this week. It's an action cam. It's going to be compared to the GoPro, so we'll see how that does. And then I do a know-how show with Padre on Thursdays, which, Ron, you should come on sometime.
I would. I just have no interest in drones or quadcopters.
It doesn't have to be drones. We could do 1 minute of a movie know-how. We'll just make it up.
Yeah, maybe. I can show you the know-how on how to commit to too many podcasts.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
Yeah. So speaking of that, as Brian alluded to, I talked about it last week, but in case you missed it, I launched a new show, a new podcast called The Goodfellas Minute. And you can go to goodfellasminute.com. We're into week number two as me and my cohorts, Josh and Connor, who I also do the iFanboy podcast with, analyze the movie Goodfellas minute by minute. And today was a very awkward minute as the main character, Henry Hill, gets a beating. And we talk about that, and I share some of my upbringing in an Italian household in New York and the beatings that occurred. Yeah, it gets awkward. But
I understand. I had Romanian parents.
Yeah, it was a different time. That's all I'm saying. I deserved it. No, but anyway. So yeah, we're having a blast over Goodfellas Minute, so check that out. And of course, check out iFanboy.com where we're talking about comic books every week. And then if you like my shenanigans, you can go to about.me/RonXO. Follow me on Twitter and Google+ and Facebook and Instagram, all the fun stuff. And actually, I wrote an article this past weekend. I published it on Monday on Medium, basically with my review of the pilot episode of the Muppets on ABC, and dealing with a little bit of the controversy as to whether or not they're suitable for all ages or not. And that got a lot of traction this week. And so I thank everybody who read that and commented and recommended it. If you didn't, go check it out. You can find it in my feed somewhere, or just look on Medium and search the Muppets, and you can find that sort of thing. I like the Muppets, so what are you gonna do? I feel like someone has to defend the Muppets. That's all I'm saying.
Keep fighting the good fight, Ron.
I'm trying.
I'm on your side. Yeah. So don't. I'm gonna go home and watch Muppets and pass out after this. So.
Tonight's episode is really good. I watched it last night, and it has a very Seinfeld feel to it. So I strongly recommend it. So. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for this week's show. So if you want to participate and let us know what you think, you can always leave us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can shoot us an email or a video mail. We love getting those. You can email us at AAA@twit.tv. That's AAA@twit.tv. We're on Twitter @AndroidShow. We're on Reddit at twitaa.reddit.com. And you can find all the show notes and past episodes at twit.tv/AAA. And you can subscribe on YouTube or iTunes. And you can catch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. Next week, Jason will be back, and I'll be very thankful. Until then, have a great week, and we'll catch you next time.